Recent business trends across the real estate industry in the U.S. are in many ways quite similar to what our counterparts overseas have experienced in their markets. But in a world where government and corporate policies and, indeed, investment priorities are as varied as the languages spoken across the ocean, we wanted to learn more about the state of play among European investors. On this episode, perspectives on the global flow of capital in a changing, sometimes unsettled world, including a particular view on the role of technology in investment decision-making.
There are some really exciting areas that we're working on as it relates to technology, which will drive efficiencies, but most importantly for us, deliver a better investment outcome for our clients.
That's Nick Montgomery, the global head of real estate for Schroders Capital. Based in London, Nick was elevated to this post last year after more than a decade at the firm. Today, Schroders manages an overall portfolio of nearly $100 billion in assets. That includes some 23 billion pounds sterling, around 30 billion US dollars that is, invested in a range of real estate strategies.
The one consistent message that I get from clients is of the importance and the value of data to them, and in a fashion by which they can use it efficiently, both to save them time and to give them better information on whether it's the risk to their asset or the risk to their portfolio or analysis associated with that portfolio and the risks that are in the future.
And that's Lee Bruce, a CBRE executive director who heads the company's UK valuations and advisory services business. Lee is currently in his 20th year with CBRE, and his team is the largest valuations team in the country, covering all sectors with specialists based in 13 cities across the UK and Ireland. Coming up, the global flow of capital and an outlook on how investors see new technologies forging the future of their work. I'm Spencer Levy, and that's right now on The Weekly Take. Welcome to The Weekly Take, and we are delighted to be here today at Schroders Capital's headquarters in London with Nick Montgomery, Global Head of Real Estate for Schroders Capital. Nick, thanks for coming out. Thanks for hosting us.
Pleasure. Good to see you.
And then we have our friend and colleague, Lee Bruce, Head of Valuation, UK and Ireland CBRE. Lee, thanks for coming out today.
Thanks, Peter.
So, Nick, tell us how's it going? The market has been clearly volatile. Just give us your sense of where the market is today for Schroders Capital.
Yeah, okay. So we're investing globally. There's uneven pricing, but I think at a sort of a high level, we're dealing with obviously significant uncertainty. And we've, I guess, become accustomed to that really over the course of the last 10 years, but it's accelerated from a geopolitical perspective and not least obviously the tariff situation. I think from a real estate perspective, whilst that has and continues to cause lower investment volumes, a bit more stickiness perhaps in occupational markets, you know, we still think actually it's an interesting point in the cycle for real estate because we have had a significant correction. So all these geopolitical uncertainties are happening when we have experienced that repricing. So for us, it's about sticking to our long-term investment philosophy, continuing to invest in line with those long-term structural secular trends. And although, as I say, there is that uncertainty, there is cautiousness, actually we are optimistic about the outlook, taking a sort of a medium to long-term view.
Staying with Schroders Capital real estate strategy, just break it down in terms of the types of vehicles you have, debt, equity, core, otherwise.
It's 23 billion sterling of assets that we manage across our business. It's a diverse business. We've got about half of those assets are in the UK, and our business was born, I guess, 50 years ago with the launch of a fund that we still run today, Schroders Capital UK Real Estate Fund. But obviously the business has evolved significantly since then. So half the assets in the UK, the balance of our portfolio is across both continental Europe, where we have various key markets, boots on the ground, and also Asia. We are also increasingly investing indirectly via our solutions team, where we are investing, you know, fully globally. We're running open-ended institutional funds. We're running listed funds where we're actually the manager of real estate investment trusts, both in the UK, across the continent of Europe, but also we have a very successful Swiss REIT that we run. We're also obviously have and continue to move into more alternative real estate types. We're in some cases, for example, setting up our own teams to invest into hotels, but also investing indirectly into other operational real estate types. Diverse business, but as I say, very clear investment philosophy. And I guess I'll just finish by saying, and I think as a wider business, we're seeking to differentiate ourselves in being really clear how the area of sustainability and impact is integral to everything that we do. Largely because we genuinely believe, and there's clear empirical evidence now for, you know, the brown discount, but for us more importantly the green premium, and how we can leverage that asset management capability to drive higher earnings from our assets.
When we speak to our European-based, UK-based clients, they put that front and center far more often than many of our American clients. Yeah. And I think it's why when I have these conversations, I say, look, I'm not sure what your position is on sustainability, but if you want to have European investors in your funds, in your buildings, this has to be front and center.
No, it is. Look, and there's a regulatory dimension to that, of course. Mm-hmm. And the landscape is obviously a bit different, as you say, in Europe now versus perhaps what's happening in the US. But I think from a real estate perspective, we contribute 40% of global carbon emissions as an industry. You know, whatever short, medium-term government policy is, we can see that our occupiers are wanting more sustainable, high quality, more amenity in the buildings that they're occupying, and having the specialist expertise to deliver that decarbonisation, but also deliver the right product for the right market is really critical. And as I say, you know, it is coming through in returns, both in how, you know, valuers are pricing the brown discount, the obsolescence risk, but again, for us, you know, more importantly, how we can drive higher earnings and rental growth by delivering those asset improvements.
So let's turn to valuations now, Lee. You certainly have had probably one of the most difficult jobs in real estate over the last 3 years with this rising interest rate environment. Tell us where valuations are today. Tell us a little bit about how challenging or not your business was over the last several years.
I think it's far more challenging to be a fund manager right now in real estate than it is to be a valuer. That's the first thing I would say.
No doubt.
The second thing I would say is, as a valuer, as a practitioner myself, the most exciting period of any valuer is when actually you get movement in the markets. Mm-hmm. So a major economic shock to the system, that's when valuers become popular. Mm-hmm. And suddenly your clients want to see you. So actually, although it can be very challenging economically, and it's not always good for business, mm-hmm. it is a fantastic time to be a valuer. The last few years has been challenging, I suppose, for valuation in the sense that there's been a general slowdown in transaction volumes for some time now. And so we all would like to have lots of evidence to, you know, to justify where our valuations are and where they're moving and where they're behaving, and not rely too much just on sentiment. But there has been gaps in part of the market over that period of time. Having said that, when I look at the UK compared to other geographies around the world, actually, there still has been an element of transaction volumes. We're more transparent here generally in our market than many geographies around the world. So that does help valuers. That helps us.
And just for our listeners, what do you mean by transparency?
So by transparency, I mean we do share evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, we're more public, I think, in terms of where things transact at. Mm-hmm. We're not super confidential on that evidence. It's shared. There's an industry of valuers who look after large corporate real estate and fund managers. And that information is quite widely shared across the sector, and that helps us get the right numbers. So what that means is, I think if you look at the way the UK behaves compared to other markets, it sometimes is generally more dynamic. But I think that is a good thing, actually, on the whole. As we come into this year, we know investment volumes picked up in Q4 last year. Mm-hmm. London definitely picked up. Liquidity for larger lot sizes is actually proven. It's coming through. We think we had 5 or 6 transactions already in London this year, over 100 million. So that, for me, is great news. Mm-hmm. And that is international investment. There's been a lot of investment more recently from Australia. Fantastic. Japan. And that's just the sort of behavior we want to see and observe. And that shows that UK real estate PLC is open for business. And I think it's trading reasonably well under difficult circumstances at times compared to other geographies around the globe.
So let's just talk a little bit of a timeline here. And I'll use peak to trough, and where are we today? If peak was 2021, trough was 2023, we're here today. How much did it fall peak to trough, and where are we today? Ballpark.
Ballpark. It came off about 25%, I think, ballpark. Yeah.
Well, your dates are broadly right for most markets, aren't they? I mean, we had started to dial down risk sort of early in 22. We were selling some of our lower yielding assets, or where we'd completed business plans, we sold some very low yielding industrial. The nadir of the market for me, at least from a UK perspective, was being asked to attend a panel in mid 2023 alongside other equity managers. It was for our real estate investment trust, where the name of the panel was the Undatables.
The Undatables,
yeah. Because at that point, there was a lot of caution around the sector. And I think, particularly in the UK, we're honest, the sector's been pretty unloved for a little while now, almost going back to Brexit. You know, whatever you thought of Brexit, you know, it certainly had an impact on international capital flow and obviously subsequently growth. I think that is now changing. And I think, you know, as I said at the start, although we have had and continue to deal with, you know, uncertain or events, as the political expression goes, we are nonetheless, I think, at an interesting point in the cycle for future vintages. You know, we're sitting obviously in the city today, there are cranes, but actually if you look at the supply side coming through, in most, you know, knowledge-based, you know, European markets, offices, through to, you know, industrials, through to retail, and then alternative property types, we have a significant shortage, right? So although the outlook for yields is, I think, uncertain, and I think we're a bit more cautious about just how fast and low rates will go because of our view about inflation more broadly, actually, we're pretty optimistic about the outlook for earnings growth, which ultimately is why you own real estate, right? You own it for the rent.
And by the way, this is a audio only show, but I'm now looking out the window at Schroeder's beautiful offices here at One London Place, and there I see three cranes, one to my left, two behind me. The famous Gherkin building is right behind me, for those people who know London city real estate, which is a sign of optimism to me.
Well, it is, but actually, compared perhaps to previous points in the cycle, where from a historical perspective, in the prime parts of London market, low vacancy, a lot of the cranes that we can see at the window are pre-let, right? So the building that we are looking at, and I know there's no, we're not being filmed here, but the building across the road there, that's a new headquarters for Clifford Chance. They've moved across from Canary Wharf. Down the road is a new HSBC building. Interestingly, I think in both cases, they've probably not got enough space. But they are creating buildings that have the highest sustainability standards, the right amenities, they're on top of the Elizabeth line. And for those sorts of assets, you know, the rental side is actually very good.
So let's talk about office for just a moment, because I think what our American listeners would like to hear is the differences between the UK in particular and the US. The US is a tale of two worlds. For the best stuff in the best submarkets, rents have never been higher right now in the US. But for the second tier and the third tier, very different story. What's the story here in the UK? How has it impacted valuations?
The headline story, though, isn't that different. Mm-hmm. So there's been a flight to quality, certainly ever since COVID. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to occupy office space, you might occupy less space, but you want the best quality space, both to attract staff into the office, because we all know anybody running a business knows the value of people having people in the office. So as part of the sort of war for talent now in the UK, you want to attract them to good space. So it matters. You know, in CBRE in London, we're lucky. We've got a fantastic office, Henrietta House, and that really matters. So when I'm hiring staff, that counts. I shut them around the office and shut them around the breakout areas, and you know, it's an attractive place to work. So there's a flight to quality. There is a big divide between the best and the worst. So we have got performance there across that best quality space. You can see it, particularly in the West End, where rents are flying. And you can see it in our best cities around the country. So Manchester, Birmingham, Bristol, in the best offices, they achieve really high end rents. But there is a big, you know, there's a big rest of the market, and that's, I guess, the area which we haven't seen any return to, you know, valuation improvement over the past period. We're not really seeing rental growth, and some of those assets need to be repositioned. Some of them will not be big headquarters for banks regionally in the next 10 years. They're going to be repositioned to other uses. Clearly, in some cases, it will be forms of housing. And it's about the viability of that to make it work for investors to convert them. But that's a challenge both for private capital, and it's also a challenge for the public sector.
I'd echo most of what Lee has said. I think You know, we've particularly over the course of the last 5 years or so, we've been deliberately underweight where we've got diversified strategies to the office sector. You know, and consequently overweight, particularly to multi-let industrial, for example. But across Europe, more broadly, where we have invested, we've invested in, you know, knowledge-based economies, great infrastructure, you know, as Lee said, so that we can attract the best talent to Schroders. I think central London is starting to show signs of recovery. We from an investment side as well, we've seen some quite big transactions over the course of the last few weeks where you've got UK sort of institutions, interestingly, buying some quite big lot sizes. We're beginning to see a bit more interest coming out of Asia, Middle East. You know, it'll be interesting to see how much of that capital potentially would have gone to the US, but now might be more focused on Europe.
So let's shift now, and I would like to talk about where we are going from a data and technology standpoint.
Yeah.
And so from a data and technology standpoint, we've had several shows on this. So let me just start with the valuation question. From a big picture standpoint, how is data and technology helping the valuation business?
It's incredibly important. The one consistent message that I get from clients is of the importance and the value of data to them and in a fashion by which they can use it efficiently, both to save them time and to give them better information on whether it's the risk to their asset or the risk to their portfolio or analysis associated with that portfolio and the risks that are in the future. So as a supplier to Schroders Real Estate, what I'm thinking about is our data in a good place? What can we take from that data to add value to our client? And how can I do that in an efficient manner, both for myself as CBRE and for our end user? So those are the kind of things I'm thinking about. I'm kind of thinking about also technology, which helps me do things faster. Everybody wants stuff faster and in a more efficient way. So we're spending a lot of time thinking about that at the moment.
People are talking about the disruption from data technology, specifically at the valuation sector. How much is it going to disrupt the valuation business, or does it make the valuation business go to a higher level, meaning that the more complicated deals?
So I see it's just improvements. It's just development and improvement. It's us being, it'll make us more sophisticated in the years to come. Mm-hmm. You'll still need valuers to interpret that information to make sure it also corresponds to what you're actually seeing, so to validate it. But to my point about speed, it'll let us do things faster, quicker, and more dynamically.
So Nick, from your perspective, data technology, how is it impacting your business?
I think for us, it's allowing us to deliver efficiencies in the way that we run the business, I guess more generally. We have Copilot now on everything that we're doing, and it makes report writing a bit easier, and it's delivering synopses of things. That allows us to, I guess in that respect, to run faster. I think it will have a big impact, if you like, on the more commoditized parts of the real estate market. And as you say, that could impact valuation. But I think equally, I think areas of property management already seeing huge improvements in efficiencies by using, you know, some of these new AI systems. I think it will also help us make better investment decisions. You know, we've got technology here in the building where we have AI systems preparing first drafts of investment reports using all manner of different data sources. Even thinking about what should we have sort of AI investment committee members, for example.
Let's stop there for a second, and I'm going to rewind that tape for 15 seconds. You've got six humans sitting around a table and two AI investment committee members. What does that mean?
Well, we're not doing it yet, but it means you've got the ability to essentially put that proposal within a system and getting a really interesting perspective from AI on that transaction based on data sources, which, you know, we wouldn't have even contemplated 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think that's down the road. I think what we are doing already, which is really interesting, is how we are now using, and I gave the example earlier of our UK impact strategy, our ability to, at the sort of the touch of a button, provide an incredible level of geospatial analysis to allow us to underwrite assets in a way that would have taken us weeks previously. Mm-hmm. So we have a system we've developed for our UK impact strategy, which we're rolling out, which takes a myriad of data sources, government data sources, around things like, you know, housing, health, you know, distance from a doctor's surgery, distance from a dentist, distance from the bus stop, and many, many, many more. Mm-hmm. and then through AI essentially driving a rating that looks at all those areas, and importantly using that system to identify need and where there's a potential for our capital to deliver a positive outcome in line with that social impact strategy. So I think there are some really exciting areas that we're working on as it relates to technology, which will drive efficiencies, but most importantly for us, deliver a better investment outcome for our clients.
So let's just put this in practical terms, and now I'm like being a movie script writer here. We have the investment committee today, which is 6 or 8 human beings sitting around the table using traditional metrics. 2 years from now, maybe we have the AI bot there that has a vote or at least input into what you're saying. And so we're here at One London Place. And Schroeder, do you own this building?
No, we don't.
Okay. So whoever owns this building has a choice of, am I going to build this building? And the 6 or 8 committee members are, this is great. Schroeder's got investment grade credit. But, you know, the metro stop is 1 block too far away. And because it's 1 block too far away, we think that people will return to office 3.5 days a week versus 4. And because of that, we think that your building, while it looks great on day one, won't look as great on day 3. That's the kind of thing that's going to happen?
I think, yes, insofar as that data will be there. But then there's sort of the lived experience as well, isn't it? You know, and what's the immediate environment like around that building? You know, how much tree cover is there? Is there a decent restaurant, a coffee shop? I think it's, you know, I think what's great about our ability to use those data now is how you then combine it with that human lived experience and those specialist expertise that we've got, right? You know, and actually for our asset management teams, it will allow us to spend more time on those tenant interactions, stakeholder interactions, because that can't be replaced by AI. You know, the more commoditized property management, you know, the optimization of building management systems, for example, there are these areas which are, you know, fantastic and which we're already implementing. You know, when we're marketing, selling buildings, you know, virtual fly-throughs, you know, the ability to space plan within a second, you know, those things are fantastically enabling in terms of allowing us to run faster. But you know, the great thing about the real estate industry, and you know, as we're seeing sitting here, is, you know, there is still that really critical people dimension, relationships, occupier relationships, stakeholder relationships, which should be very complementary.
And I think this is the key takeaway from this segment of the conversation, because people say, oh, it's going to disrupt valuations, it's going to disrupt building operations. The answer is, it's going to take all of us, or potentially take all of us, to spend more time on high value add activities. The analysis of the output, the relationship building, which in the commercial real estate business is maybe the number one most important component, because you're not getting a loan from a bank on a computer. You're not getting a lease with a major tenant on a computer. You're not going to be able to get a investor on a computer. It is physical. You're there, and it takes years and things that are unquantifiable, from relationship to trust and other factors.
No, that's right. Exactly right. We are managing largely, because obviously we're investing indirectly as well, but most of what we're doing is investing directly and creating the time for our teams to get out and look at assets, understand locations. That's the real value piece.
So one little, just a career tip for folks. One of the things that I've been doing for 30 years is every time I get a hotel, I try to pick my restaurant a mile or two away. Why? Because I like to walk cities. Yeah. I walk cities. I've walked every city. I'll be walking London for 3 hours this afternoon, because that is the only way to understand it. And that is one of the beauties of our business. Notwithstanding how much can be quantified, so much can't.
Yeah. Yeah, my children know more about the UK industrial market than most other teenagers. Because as you say, you're driving something, you pull off a motorway, you look at the estate, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? You got, because locations change as well, yeah? And you got to see it.
Absolutely. So we're just about out of time, but tell us your outlook of where the market is going over the next couple of years. Any structural shifts, anything being overestimated, underestimated? Starting with you, Lee, how do you see the future of real estate here in the UK?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, I'd reiterate what I said at the start. I think we're in a good place in the UK. I think the market is now gradually recovering. It's having some bumps along the way from macro global changes. And that will probably, I imagine, continue for some time. But I quite like the way we're positioned. I quite like where we are politically here. And I'm genuinely quite optimistic about the outlook. I mentioned one big change. So we've final salary pension schemes in the UK are beginning to wind down. But the good news is we've got a whole big growth of the pension industry from DC mandatory pension contributions in the UK. That will grow, I think, not unlike the Australian model. So for me, that is the next decade, next 15, 20 years.
I'd say there are three key points. I think looking at it, not just UK, but more broadly across the markets we're operating, we have seen a significant repricing. Yeah, I mean, not on the scale of the global financial crisis, because balance sheets are in much better shape, but nonetheless, it has been a significant pricing. It's been an uneven pricing as well, repricing. So I think we see, you know, sort of opportunities over the next few years to get into interesting sectors as they reprice, both by sector and the geographies in which we're operating. So we are excited about the opportunity that will come about through that repricing. The second point I'll say is, I think the underlying fundamentals are supportive in most sort of gateway cities. Most sectors around those gateway cities, there is an undersupply, there is a shortage. And as I mentioned, although, you know, the uncertainty means occupational markets could be a bit stickier perhaps than we thought going back 6 months, there is still a shortage of the best quality space. We've got cost push inflation, and we think that will drive continued rental growth, with inflation also remaining elevated. But again, I think real estate will do what it should do, which is provide that inflation hedging, which you can then enhance through the active management and getting the stock and the sector selections right. So I guess I'll just finish by saying, I think, you know, although, as I say, the outlook is uncertain, I think for investors who are looking to deploy today, we think this could be a really interesting entry point, and therefore the vintage is coming from now. Across the different parts of the market, which we think have the most structural support. I think it's a really good time to be looking at the sector.
Well, on behalf of the Weekly Take, great conversation with Nick Montgomery, Global Head of Real Estate, Schroders Capital. Nick, thank you for coming out today.
Pleasure.
And hosting us in your beautiful space. And Lee Bruce, Head of Valuation, UK and Ireland, CBRE. Lee, I'll see you back at Henrietta House in a few hours.
Thanks, Spencer.
If you caught my farewell just then, you'll note that we'll have more to come from our trip to the UK as we return to the CBRE office at Henrietta House to dig into development and construction. In something of a compliment to the investment-focused conversation you just heard, we hosted a roundtable featuring one of the top workplace builders in Europe, a show with lots of global insights and tactical takeaways. Before we go there, however, we got a show from Boston with a big dig into investing ideas that are brewing at another firm that's deploying capital all over the world. For now, remember to share this episode and look for related content on our website, cbre.com/theweeklytake. And if you like what we do, please also subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. Thanks for joining us. I'm Spencer Levy. Be smart, be safe, be well.